days. Democracy Now! Has an immediate job opening for a news writer producer. Check out democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
When I first came to Brookhaven Town, way, hey, 90.1, there was no good music to be heard around. Way, hey, 90.1. Then one day I turned on the dial. Way, hey, 90.1. There I found music to make me smile. Way, hey, 90.1. I waited for a legal ID. Way, hey, 90.1. The DJ said WUSB. Way, hey, 90.1. They start each day with the rising sun. Way, hey, 90.1. Don't ever finish till after day is done. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you want good music to hear, way, hey, 90.1. There's a station in Stony Brook you ought to hear. Way, hey, 90.1. So if you like the sounds, do take a look. Way, hey, 90.1. At WUSB Stony Brook. Hey, hey, hey.
And operating at 1.5% power, you are listening to the mighty WUSB Stony Brook, broadcasting crippled on 90.1 FM and severely handicapped on 107.3. It's time for a full power edition of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
month, here we are. Another exciting edition of Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel over here. Is Kyle over there?
Hello, Emmanuel. Can you see me as well as hear me?
I can see you and hear. I guess we should mention, you know, this show, I swear, over the last couple of years, it's just been one challenge after another. last week was our COVID show, as if every show hasn't been a COVID show for the last couple of years. But this time it affected us, pretty severely. Well, not severely, closely. I had COVID. I tested positive 12 days ago. 12 days ago, because it was on Thursday, I believe. No, it was on... What day did I test? You know what? It doesn't matter. I had to do the show from a remote location while you were up here in the studio. And then a few days after that, actually one day after that, you tested positive. So that meant we no longer had to isolate from each other, but we had to pretty much isolate from everybody else. They preferred it that way.
Did you say one day? I thought it was 5 days.
One day after this show.
Oh, after the show.
Yeah, because we did the other radio station show, and we were both in the same studio then. So so you tested positive at that point.
Yeah, that's why it didn't come up on that show.
And I tested positive again, too.
Yeah,
so I was still positive. But for that first 5 days, I was isolated, and it was really kind of spooky because, you know, I couldn't associate with anybody, even you. I mean, I could on the phone, but that was it. And that's how I did the show last week.
Yeah, we definitely changed our pattern of behavior immediately as soon as the result was apparent, and then went through a whole process of dealing with that and adjusting and coping, finding ways to maybe even have some fun with it.
And then yesterday, we thought maybe we'd be out of the woods, but no, we both tested positive again. So that means that we have to wear masks. I don't think I have to wear a mask anymore because they say for 5 days you isolate. For another 5 days after your symptoms go away, you wear a mask. And then I think you don't have to wear a mask, but I'm still doing it because just out of consideration, and it's not a big deal. It really is not a big deal at all. I guess in a day or two, you technically won't have to wear a mask.
You certainly have a reason to once you get results and... maybe feel some symptoms.
Yeah.
It's the right thing.
I still have sniffles. I still have a slight cough. I guess, you know, they're very minor symptoms.
Like, it's like this lingering dry cough.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe it. And I don't know. What other things have you noticed? Have you had trouble sleeping? Not really. I had some difficult nights.
Uh-huh.
Some just strange stuff.
I had difficult nights at the beginning.
Definitely
yes.
Threw off meals and stuff, of course, because... going into places, dining out, those things start to change when you're...
No, you can't do that.
Yeah, it's inconsiderate. So, smell. I lost some smell this
That was scary.
Week.
Yeah, you lost smell and I think taste as well because they're closely related.
A little bit. More smell.
But when you mentioned that you lost your sense of smell, I suddenly realized, hey, wait a minute. I don't really taste things. I just sort of wasn't thinking about it. You know, I was eating food and drinking things and just sort of assuming what it tasted like. And then when I started to really think about it, and I don't know if this will happen every time you start to really think about it, I started to realize, hey, wait a minute. I don't think I really am tasting something. I'm just imagining what it tastes like, but not really. And I think what happened was my taste and smell was reduced a bit. But thankfully, those two things for both of us have come back, mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah, I think I'm tasting things now. I'm pretty sure I am.
Yeah, other than cough syrup, uh-huh. I don't know.
It's a good time to take on some dares, though, and like smell or eat things that you would never eat normally. You can make some money doing that.
I did have a mandarin or like an orange, and it was yesterday or the day before, I just was sitting there and I realized citrus, I can smell that, and that... That was amazing after not having been able to smell anything.
Chocolate, you can generally smell when you're going through this, I'm told.
I was getting a lot of chocolate smells.
Yeah, so we had to eat a lot of chocolate. There was just no other way.
I was consuming chocolate. Yeah, it just made me feel normal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's what we've been going through lately. And as if on top of... excuse me. This is the cough I have left.
Oh, work it out. Work it out.
This is on top of all the other things that we've been doing over the past couple of years as far as broadcasting remotely and just trying to stay out of the effect of this whole thing. And then on top of all that, we have the radio station catastrophe, which our transmitter basically just, well, I was going to say blew up, but we're listening to Ukraine in the background and things really are blowing up there right now. So let's just say it reached the end of its life. Yeah. And we had nothing on 90.1 FM for quite some time, for at least a week. I believe today we're broadcasting at something like 1.5%. That's our chief engineer was able to basically do CPR to get that much out of it. So if you're listening to us on 90.1, you're part of the 1.5% that is privileged enough to be able to hear us on that frequency. It's horrible. It's terrible. It's not, we're not back on the air per se. And of course our other frequency 107.3, which broadcasts to a very small area on the North Shore by Stony Brook. A lot of that has been co-opted by a commercial station in Connecticut broadcasting conservative talk radio, which is so frustrating and annoying because, you know, we got this, it's called a translator station when it simulcasts another frequency. So 107.3 simulcast 90.1 FM. It's meant to fill in those gaps that another station in Connecticut at 90.1 is kind of stepping on us. So we had to get another frequency to deal with that. And we were told 7 watts is as high as we can go. And guess what? This conservative talk radio station in Bridgeport, Connecticut said, you know what? We're going to get 250 watts, even though the limit is 7 watts. And that's what they did. That's what commercial stations can do. 250 watts, just like that, and completely blew away our meager signal in many parts of the North Shore of Long Island. And on top of all that, it's a station that you can already get in Bridgeport. It's 600 AM, I don't mind saying it, WICC. They're a conservative station that broadcasts all around the area. You can get them without a problem. But they figured, yeah, we want another station in the same city. And yeah, we're the victim of that. So, you know, no matter what, we still have the internet. Do we have the internet? Are we on the internet?
Yes.
Tell me we're on the internet. Okay, we're on the internet. Sort of. Sort of? What does that mean? Okay, I think we're on the internet. You know what? The show is being archived. So people in the course of history in the future can hear this show unimpeded. So, okay, these are all the challenges that we're... You hear a dog barking? I don't know if the listeners can hear that, but we're hearing a dog in Ukraine barking right now. We can hear a dog in Ukraine barking, but we can't get above 1.5% of our signal. So, basically, we are in dire straits here at WUSB. I won't mince words. We need about $60,000 for a new transmitter. That is what it costs. We either need that or we need some kind soul to find a transmitter that isn't being used that fits our parameters.
That's not unheard of, right?
It's not unheard of. It takes a bit of finagling. Our transmitter, I believe, is 3,600 watts. So we need something in that ballpark that can be adjusted and has to actually physically fit in our transmitter room. You know, there was talk of transmitter donations and things like that, which is great. But if the transmitter is 5 times the size of the one you have, then you suddenly have to rent more room. And that's a sore point for me. And again, everything I say is my opinion. That does not reflect on anybody else at the radio station. But since nobody's able to hear me now anyway, I might as well say what's on my mind, because I don't usually do that. When we were on campus, when the transmitter was on campus, a little history here, we went on the air in 1977 with a 4,000-watt transmitter on top of a building called the Graduate Chemistry Building. It's a fairly tall building, not as tall as the hospital, but pretty tall, and got us a good portion of Long Island. The problem is that the signal interfered with some scientific experiments that were taking place on campus, which is what happens on college campuses. So a bunch of professors and scientists got rather angry at us and requested that we leave the premises. Actually leave the university, go off campus. That is what we wound up doing. We wound up moving to Bald Hill, which is taller. It's more centrally located in Selden on Long Island. And we hoped at the time it would improve our signal. Well, it did in some places, not in other places. For instance, the North Shore, like I alluded to, basically because of the hills, the hilly terrain there, our signal was lost to stations in Connecticut. Okay, fine. The real problem with us moving to basically make these entities at the university happy is that we now had to start paying rent for the transmitter room. We were on campus, didn't pay any rent because it was part of the campus. And now we have to shell out thousands of bucks a month just to exist, which we didn't have to do before. That's why, you know, I really think it's on the university to help out here, to really get this station back on the air. You know, $60,000 is a lot of money for people like us to just raise, especially when we can't broadcast to ask for it. You know, we need all the help. Excuse me. We need all the help we can get. Sorry.
Yeah, no,
this COVID is really driving me crazy.
It's understandable.
Yeah. This should be number one. You know, I see the little thermometer when you come onto campus raising money for the Seawolves or, you know, some athletic team. Great. You know, all more power to you. But WUSB is literally the voice of Stony Brook, and we need to get out there. We need as much help as we can get. It's horribly unfair to just pile this onto the shoulders of the people who already volunteer so much time and skill to keep this radio station running, to keep the various things focused upon, whether it's news or music or sports. We need help. We need help from the powers that be. If all the money that we have been paying in rent to appease the people who wanted us to move off campus, if all of that had gone into a transmitter fund, we easily could have done this. But we've been paying that month by month. And honestly, I think that should have been a university expense. I really do. And we would not be in this situation right now.
Yeah, it was, it's unfortunate. I mean, that room still exists. It still serves functionally, parts of the local translator that you talked about, mm-hmm. 107.3. We still, originate stuff and store stuff. It's kind of a museum of where we used to transmit from at the station on the top of the chemistry building. And there are other tall buildings on campus. There's plenty of space. There's plenty of ways to have mitigated or worked around those costs, and this choice now kind of forces these new costs. And at least with this new space, let's have the best equipment, you know, use it in as professional a way as possible now that it's the decision has been forced upon us. At least that's where I'm coming in on it. I think, yes, you know, this is an opportunity, great opportunity to use the space that we're paying for in the most modern and well-kept way. You're talking about the Seawolves, you know, they broadcast using the station resources too, so they benefit.
Yeah, everyone benefits. WUSB is excuse me. WUSB is I haven't been coughing like this before. WUSB is basically a real gift to the entire community, the campus community, the surrounding community, even the global community. And it's in all of our interest to basically stand up when there's a crisis. This is a crisis, and you can't just say, "Oh, your problem, not our problem." No, we all have to pitch in, and God knows the people at WUSB have been pitching in nonstop, and we need as much help as possible. Now, if you want to make a donation, we have a phone number. If there are people there now, they will pick up. If not, it'll go to voicemail and you can leave your number and someone will call you back. The phone number is 631-632-6901. 631-632. Did I get it wrong? 6901. Yeah, you got it. Okay.
No, I'm
wrong. Why were you shaking your head when I set the number?
Thinking of something I wanted to recount on a related note.
Keep your thoughts to yourself. That's 631-632-6901. That's the number to call. Or you can go to wusb.fm. That's our website. Yeah, we got the .fm, Federated States of Micronesia. That's what that stands for. But we made it work for WUSB.fm, and you can pledge directly there and help out. But, you know, we're in the middle of our fund drive anyway, which is what we have to do in order to raise money to pay that damn tower rent, which we didn't have to pay before, I think, 1989 when we made the move, or 1990, around that area. That is what we spend so much time and effort, you know, having to do. just to survive.
Were we shoveling money to USG at the time, too?
Were we what?
Shoveling money to USG at the time, too?
Shoveling money to... What does that mean?
Is it the same, like, management structure where donations are... You know, did we get to retain and use a lot of that money?
I have no idea which money you're talking about.
That we fundraise.
Yeah, the money that we raise, we use.
We managed it.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, of course. That's why we do it. Where else would it go? It goes to pay the bills and...
Right. I'm just wondering because there's more costs now. It immediately goes out the door to the tower fee.
Yeah, we don't see it. It winds up in the form of a check being written immediately.
Yeah, we talk about these numbers. We're like, we're excited when we get a new mug or a new sweatshirt design, but this money does not sit around the way it may have when we had more resources to, you know, fund different aspects of the radio station, events, and now we're mostly trying to raise funds for that. And I gotta say, and this is why I was shaking my head, the good people at this station, when they found out about this, when word broke, the kinds of response amidst the fundraising drive, the things that people were brainstorming, thinking of, trying to contribute, the kind of the sense of responsibility that people had. I had, you know, having contributed and helped out and seen, you know, people pour themselves into different projects, whether it's archiving. I know you've done so much. It's just everybody here contributes so much. To now at this moment to try to bear that amidst also fundraising, it just, I thought to myself, no, there's no way. There's no way any one person on the community side, a staff, the students, the student government or different groups, we can't bear this, any one of us, by ourselves. And that goes for the listeners too. So I just want to express that there are so many good people at the station that thought, you know, well, we're gonna have to do this. No, we're all, as a community, that's listeners, that's the administration, the school, as well as the producers and broadcasters here.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, when you pile this onto people, it can turn people defeatist because it's too much. It's too much of a challenge. And you can never figure it out on your own, so therefore you feel as if you failed. And that's the last thing that anybody affiliated with this station should feel. They should feel like they have against all odds, kept things going. I mean, a few years ago, our equipment was in dire straits. And thanks to the university, I will definitely give them credit, when we made the move to our new studios, because the building we were in was being demolished, and we had to move, they came through, and we were able to get all kinds of new equipment and broadcast state-of-the-art. That was an essential expense. There's no way we could have done that on our own. We're in the same position now. And you know, just dispel any feelings that maybe we're just blowing through transmitters, you know, and without regard to their preservation, this transmitter, the one that just blew up, I believe we got that in 1991 that we actually turned that one on for the first time. Now, I mentioned before, we went on the air in 1977, and that was... that was just about 15 years, which is what a transmitter lasts for, about 15 years, 1991. Do the math. That's 31 years ago. It's the same damn transmitter. It lasted twice its lifetime. So the station, our chief engineer, we made this work. We made it work, and we got the most out of it that we could possibly get out of it. But this is the kind of expense that radio stations have. It's essential, and... we have to meet this challenge. We cannot let this become normal. We cannot let us being at 1.5% power or only being on 107.3 or being at reduced power in any way, we can't let that become the new normal for us. Otherwise, we just lose so much.
Can I just reiterate, in the maintenance of that, the amazing engineering tasks and technical feats to find transmitter parts that are out of production, things new, old stock, our operations groups here and Frank, of course, worked really hard to maintain it for that long, it just like you said, and it was just great lengths to find that stuff. There were other parts that were on our list to to get to, right? We had priorities, but of course, because we are community driven, we were, you know, waiting on parts. You know, we had to prioritize different parts of the move-in, the archival, disk library. There's weighing those things because the budgets were tight, because you know, there's a lot of different considerations. It made it, you know, it took longer, you know, after a while, this kind of thing happens. As you said, it's double the lifespan. We're doing the best we can as far as finding the right things and keeping up with that maintenance, but you get a surprise like this and it really kind of makes you appreciate what people were doing just to make that signal work the way it was.
And just to put things in perspective, what WUSB is, we're a very unique entity. There are a lot of radio stations on the air and excuse me, I'm really sorry about this, but we're isolated. So we're not giving the COVID to anybody else. Basically, there are commercial stations. You're familiar with commercial stations. They play commercials, and that's how they pay for all their expenses. And they have a lot of really good first-rate equipment that overcharging for commercials gets you. They also pay their people. We're below 92, which means we're a non-commercial station. There are lots of other non-commercial stations. Some of them are religious. Some of them are NPR. very few of them are what we are, which is completely volunteer driven, completely community and campus based. If you go to every other radio station in the area, they're either going to be affiliated with National Public Radio and they get a ton of money that way, or they are basically a religious station, which somehow qualifies as non-commercial and they take up a frequency in the non-commercial zone of the FM dial. In our area, there are no other stations like us. And we have a particular challenge because we have to raise money on our own. We don't have the benefit of deep pockets from big organizations, and we don't want that, because if we had that, we wouldn't be able to broadcast the kinds of programming that we broadcast all the time, 24 hours a day. It's quite unique, and in fact, if you're one of the people who listens to us from a different part of the country or a different part of the world, I dare say you probably don't have a station like WUSB in your community. It's that rare. It's that unique. And that's why it needs to be supported. That's why it needs to regain its strength. And I dare say that we should be stronger. We should figure out ways to defeat the challenges that keep coming our way. For instance, the 107.3 challenge of that conservative talk radio station in Bridgeport suddenly putting up a more powerful station at that very same frequency, which I believe goes against FCC rules, but what do I know? If we move that transmitter up on the hospital, which is the tallest building on Long Island, that could solve that problem right there. And that is something that we need to be pushing for. That's something that we need support from the powers that be and from listeners and anybody else who can help. Hey, maybe you know something about getting grants so that we can have this emergency fund covered in various ways. There's all kinds of solutions, but you need people who know how to play the system. And like I said, we're a bunch of volunteers. You know, we know music, we know politics sometimes, but the ins and outs of finances, maybe not so much.
Well, and we're stretched thin. We're really, I mean, I'm being honest in that assessment. It's true. It's volunteer based, and volunteers taking on an incredible amount.
Yeah.
Really, this is DIY, but on an incredible professional level. There's such dedication in the music shows, talk as we are, and I guess let us move right into that.
Yeah, let's do a show.
WUSB.FM.
Yes. Again, please call, pledge, whatever you can afford, and spread the word about our issues here, our problems, that our massive challenges. Phone number 631-632-6901, website WUSB.FM. Check, just write out $60,000 and all our problems will be solved.
It's tax deductible, I believe.
If you have a spare transmitter lying around that is in good shape and fits our criteria, let us know that too. Okay, so this COVID thing that we're currently, I don't know, are we afflicted? I still have a cough and it's bugging me. I don't feel bad, but it's a nagging cough. And I keep testing positive three times now.
It's really, really hard to clear this bug.
This is sicker than I've been in many years. It really is. I mean, I feel fine. I felt worse at the beginning. So I think I'm over most of it, but boy, I want this to go away.
Yeah, the unproductive dry cough. That's the scary.
I think my cough is getting productive though.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think it's just more cough syrup.
Yeah, yeah. So CDC now estimates that 3 in 4 kids have had coronavirus infections. 3 out of 4 kids. Wow. Okay. Fortunately, they don't seem to be severely affected, and that's a good thing. I am so sick of people pointing the finger and saying, "Oh, look, this proves that it was an overreaction." You know, when you're flirting with 1 million people dead in one country alone, nothing is an overreaction. And if there was an overreaction, if people said wear masks a little longer than they needed to, or keep socially distant a little more than was absolutely necessary, I prefer that than the underreaction that we started this whole thing off with, where people were dying left and right and science was being questioned and defied. I think we, there were missteps, but there were also a lot of good decisions. And thank God the vaccine was out there. The only reason we are not sicker than we are right now is because of that vaccine. And that is a fact. And you can choose to debate that if you wish, but you might as well debate gravity. It's, you know, this is a scientific fact. And, it also says a lot about how quickly we can get our act together and tackle this kind of a challenge. If we had been in this state a couple of years ago, it would have been far, far worse. With 3/4 of kids being infected, and apparently the Omicron subvariant BA.2.12.1 has a really steep growth. Basically, the positivity rate was, I think, around 5%. It was less than that a few weeks ago, but it was recently about 5%. Now it's more than 18%.
Yeah, this just seems like it's selected for super transmissibility. Uh-huh. And then in the like kind of evolutionary anticipation or hopes, not that a virus can hope, but that it might become more virulent as it's spread more widely across the population, albeit maybe with more mild effect. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem that mild, especially for people who've had the vaccination. So there's other aspects of it that have changed too. This is definitely a mutant.
It's a pain in the ass, but you know, it's mild for me compared to what I've seen other people go through. This is mild.
And that's doubling in a week.
Yeah. Now they say nearly 60% of all Americans have been infected by COVID at some point. A week or so ago, that was around 43. So, you know, this is particularly contagious. And you're seeing all the people who were very, very careful, like Steve Colbert caught it. Kamala Harris, she's positive. People who really, you know, they were wearing masks and taking all the precautions wasn't enough.
Well, and their occupation is testing them far more than the rest of, I think, the wider community, right? Because unless their work or lifestyle demands they're tested frequently, people are only testing, like in our case, when they feel symptomatic or they suspect maybe they were exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they're finding out probably much more frequently because they're tested so often. That's the way I reacted to that, because I was pretty amazed that other people were getting it as well, which kind of goes back to my theory that this is just evolved to something incredibly transmissible the way everyone's got it. I've had talked to family members. It's uh-huh. out there big time right now.
I'm hoping it's the last round. Like, okay, everybody who hasn't had COVID now, line up, because you're going to get it now. So if you do get it, don't panic, especially if you've had the vaccine. If you haven't gotten the vaccine, go out and get the vaccine. Please do that for yourself. It really, really makes a difference. I know nobody who has gotten the vaccine who has gotten seriously sick. People who do get seriously sick, tend to be the ones who have not gotten the vaccine. I don't know what more you need than that.
It was really hard to watch us going through this as everyone's celebrating transport and air travel. It wasn't funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole thing with the mask. We talked about this last week. But with the masks on planes, some ignorant judge in Florida that Trump appointed, who was not qualified to be a justice, a federal judge. The American Bar Association decreed that. They said she's not qualified. She hasn't ever tried a case. She's, you know, has not been on the bench long enough. She basically has overridden the CDC. She knows more about the virus than the Centers for Disease Control. Look, I don't care how angry you are at the CDC or how mad you are at Democrats. If you're going around saying that this judge knows more about diseases than the CDC, you're really fighting the wrong fight. You have to see that. You have to see that. All right, let's go over to Warzone here. Moldova. Yeah, where we were not that long ago. Basically, things are starting to heat up there, as we predicted. There were these mysterious explosions. They damaged some radio towers that broadcast in Russian. Supposedly, one of Russian military units has been attacked. Basically, this is a breakaway region of Moldova called Transnistria. We went through this on the train. When we took the train from Chisinau to Kyiv a few years ago, we passed through that breakaway region. We didn't stop. Unfortunately, we didn't stop. But this is a portion of that country that is occupied by Russia, just like parts of Georgia are occupied by Russia, just like parts of Ukraine have been occupied by Russia.
You want to know what I found out, just out of curiosity? There was an article about it, I believe in the New York Times, that talked about this area in Moldova. Mm-hmm. And I guess by design, like 80% of their like the largest power plant and oil and gas terminals and storage is in that region.
Yeah,
so it's very far away from the capital and where a lot of the populace is, but it's over there by design and otherwise in this sort of design, this control mechanism where it could all of a sudden not work, and then the other parts of the country very far away don't have access to their power.
Well, interestingly enough, the eastern parts of Ukraine, the Donetsk,
Luhansk and Donetsk.
Yeah, that region over there, are also breakaway republics. Happens to be the part of the country, I didn't know this before, happens to be the part of the country that is the most industrialized and basically is extremely valuable to the rest of Ukraine. One of the reasons why, you know, I've always asked, why would you want to hold on to a place where, you know, the people want to break away, or there's a significant part of the percentage of people who want to break away? That's why, because it provides you with energy and all sorts of other things. Okay, now I get it. Similar in Moldova, and this is a strategy that Russia has right now. And we're seeing,
I just want to interject that the whole time we were talking about it, mm-hmm. it was this romance of, oh, there's all these people there. I'm sure there are, but let's not be wooed and lulled into this romantic idea of the cultural, sanctity of an area that is basically where the energy is coming from. Mm-hmm. This is just blackmail with energy.
Well, okay, yes.
I mean, writ large.
Russians are playing a very strategic game here. Now, it's widely believed, and it was widely predicted, that what is happening now in Moldova is basically being used as an excuse by Russia. Oh, now we have to move in. Look, our transmitters are being bombed. Does it make any sense for Ukraine, currently fighting for their survival, to go into another country and start bombing them and basically start bombing the people that are attacking you in your own country. It's suicide. It doesn't make any sense. But for Russia, it makes perfect sense to do something like that, because then you have an excuse to say, oh, well, we have to protect our people here. We have to protect our resources, even though we're occupying another land. And if you look at a map, you'll see that where they're fighting now in Ukraine, on the southern part of the country, if they take over that region, very nice pathway to Transnistria in Moldova, and before you know it, they've got the whole area from Moldova, southern Ukraine, Crimea, right over into Russia. And you know, we can't be surprised by this. Can't be surprised. So, eyes on Moldova, see what happens next. I just hope nobody really falls for this. I don't know, though.
No indication. I think this is widely being understood and interpreted. The signs, the symbols are there. There are a lot of people willing to confront this, stand up for sovereignty and mm-hmm. so forth.
Yeah, for whatever good that does. You know, we basically need to see something happen that makes Russia change the way they're thinking, the way they are acting, because it doesn't lead anywhere good. On that note, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, boy, this guy, I swear to God, he just keeps doing one horrible thing after another and doesn't seem to have to pay any price for it. Why is that? There is a parallel to Russia here because, you know, you saw what happened to Cuomo. All right, when it was revealed how much he had stepped out of line, gone quickly. People reacted. People did something about it. In this particular case, well, what are you going to do? You know, he's in power. He's got the legislature behind him. He's got the Florida Senate behind him. You know, basically, they've set it all up so that no matter what he does, he gets away with it. Most recent thing, he signed a bill creating election police. It basically means that if you're one of the marginalized people trying to vote, you're going to feel extra intimidation because there is going to be this new police force that's making sure that you don't do anything at all that they deem to be suspicious. And who knows what that could be. Now, keep in mind, there are basically zero examples of election fraud. In fact, those few examples of proven election fraud turn out to be Republicans trying to vote more than once. Yeah, look it up. It's amazing. But as far as the people that they allege, they are convinced, stole the 2020 election, not one bit of evidence. It doesn't keep them from continuing to say, oh, we need to do this in a bunch of states. But there's no evidence at all. And now there's an election police force where none is needed, just to intimidate people even more. We just see it happening week after week where, you know, okay, here's something else. New congressional maps. All right. Basically, DeSantis and his Republican cohorts who control the whole state basically drew new maps that are a tremendous advantage for Republicans, tremendous disadvantage to Democrats. Challenges? Well, yeah, it's going to court, but guess what? The judge in charge, appointed by Trump, or at least he's a Republican. I'm not sure if it's appointed by Trump, but not recusing himself. I think he ruled in a previous case that was similar. Very definite conflict of interest, but no, it's going to go their way. You know it's going to go their way. Meanwhile, here in New York, same thing happening. Basically, the congressional maps redrawn, but this time by Democrats. And because it was by Democrats, challenges everywhere. In fact, twice, they've been told that they don't have the authority to do this by two courts. And it's being heard right now at New York's top court. We're arguing today over whether authority can be taken away from the state legislature for drawing the state's congressional districts. It's just incredible to me. Something happens in New York that's basically the same thing that's happening in all the parts of the country, but because Democrats are doing it, oh, we can't let them get away with that. And because the courts are stacked in various ways, that's exactly what happens. The first time this was overturned, it was, again, a Republican judge that made that happen. Well, okay, now at least it's at the Court of Appeals, and we shouldn't have to think this way, but they have a Democratic advantage. And it is hoped that this will finally go the Democrats' way. Keep in mind, this redistricting, it's not per se taking advantage of a political majority. It's putting things back the way it was 10 years ago when the Republicans took advantage and redrew everything. So it's not changing the maps before 10 years ago. It's basically putting them back to where they were or to somewhere similar so that districts are more representative of the populations that live there. I think the whole thing stinks. You know, all the redistricting, all the gerrymandering that takes place, I wish it would all be abolished. But if it's not going to be abolished, then Democrats have to play the game too. And that's what they have to learn to do, is play to win. All this playing to be fair sounds nice, but winds up biting you in the ass. So that's where we stand on that. But man, this whole DeSantis thing, it's insane. It's insane. The textbooks, the math textbooks that were being rejected, I've looked at the examples printed in the New York Times. What they're upset about is crazier than even I thought. Where basically, they don't like the fact that in math problems, people are being urged to think differently. That's it. Just think differently. Think of a problem and try approaching it from a different angle. Learn to disagree respectfully. Words like that. Little words of advice on the side. This is somehow a threat to Republicans. And also, and they don't say this, but I know it's true. If you look at the textbooks, almost all the kids or figures that are basically saying these little words of advice on the side, they're drawn characters, nearly all of them are African-American. And I know they hate that. They can't say that, but that's one of the reasons they're so incensed against math textbooks and calling them out for critical race theory and all kinds of other nonsense, which is not being taught at all, no matter how many times they insist it is. It's disgusting. And they won't show examples, which tells you right away that they're hiding something. They want to just move on and put the fear of the Lord into everybody. This kind of thing is so wrong. And it just keeps getting worse. I don't know how much more evidence people need, you know, to see what is being done in these one-party states where, you know, one party has all the power and gets to do whatever they want. You lose the right of choice for abortions. Trans people, gay people wind up being attacked mercilessly, losing their rights. You think it's going to stop there? It's going to keep going. It's going to keep getting worse. And especially if we don't do enough about it, if we don't get angry enough, if we both sides the issue. Yeah, both sides aren't perfect, but one side is a lot worse than another. If we can't say that, we've lost the battle already. Yeah, you know, you won't get everything you want from the side that is less evil, but you better hope that side wins, because if the more evil side wins, you've lost it all. Okay, you know, here's something. You can't say you're surprised by this. A California man was arrested and charged after making threats against, you ready, Merriam-Webster for the company's inclusive language around gender. Yeah, Jeremy David Hansen was arrested and charged with one count of interstate communication of threats to commit violence, according to a press release. He has since been released ahead of an upcoming court date. He's accused of leaving threatening comments on Merriam-Webster's website, as well as sending threatening messages via the company's Contact Us feature. On October 2nd, 2021, he used the username Anonymous to comment on Merriam-Webster's dictionary entry for the term female. Here's a quote. It is absolutely sickening that Merriam-Webster now tells blatant lies and promotes anti-science propaganda. Yeah, I like how they twist the science to suit their side. There is no such thing as gender identity. The imbecile who wrote this entry should be hunted down and shot. You know, I just have to say, if you find yourself fighting against the dictionary, you're probably on the wrong side.
Well, also the sort of circular logic, like if they feel his entry in their comments is as stupid and should be resolved in the same way, is there a double standard? You know, like, you better be willing to, you know, take it if you're going to serve it up.
I just wonder, why are these people so bent out of shape over these issues that don't affect them in any way, but affect other people greatly? Why does that bother you so much? In a message sent to Merriam-Webster, excuse me, via the Contact Us function, it's alleged that Hansen wrote the company had altered the definition of female as part of the left's efforts to corrupt and degrade the English language and deny reality. That's what the left wants to do. Why would the left want to do that? Why would the left want to deny reality? It doesn't make any sense. here's a quote. This is what he said. You headquarters should be shot up and bombed. You evil Marxists should all be killed. It would be poetic justice to have someone storm your offices and shoot up the place, leaving none of you commies alive. You know, and these words go back directly to people like DeSantis and people like Trump. Basically, equate anything they disagree with, Zeldin too, you know, as Marxist, as communist, as red, as if that is even still relevant. You know, maybe in the 1980s it was. It's not anymore. And what people on the so-called left are doing right now pales in comparison to what actual leftist policies are, you know, in other countries. This is so tame and mild, and yet it evokes such hatred. It's really scary.
I think it's also a byproduct of the customer is always right and sort of this service-oriented economy and retail culture. And the culture war topics being sort of weaponized or like permeating. And they think that like presenting these grievances to companies that are very customer oriented and want to, appear on approachable via new platforms and social media. They're really in tune with and listening to the desires of everyone out there. So this sense of sort of corporate bullying, this entitlement to bully the corporate feedback mechanisms or their listening of you is somehow permission to bludgeon them with your bigotry. And that's not really how it works. You know, they're standing for things, they have businesses to run and they're accommodating, but they're not necessarily going to be bludgeoned into changing their corporate policies, especially when it comes to things that align really well with the kind of office environment, like the kind of expectations Human Resources would have of their own employees. So that people out there think just because I buy, you know, bargain basement something somewhere as a consumer that I can come back and start yelling and screaming like a howler monkey over whatever god awful thing I've dredged up and want to accuse this company of enabling. I mean, they've better things to do. You're not the kind of customer they're trying to help.
Yeah. Okay, we have to close things up, but here's a story that just came in today. a couple of weeks ago, we had a special program that followed ours about development on a neighboring site to Stony Brook called Gyrodyne and Flower Field. Well, today, head of the Harbor Village and area residents sued the town of Smithtown and the former defense contractor known as Gyrodyne, alleging their failed environmental review permitted the company to move ahead with their property's subdivision plans. By the way, if you haven't heard that special program, which consists of all kinds of people in the town speaking up against this, you can go to our website. You can go to www.2600.com/offthewall and simply listen to the special that aired 2 weeks ago, which, what's today's date? 27th? So if today is the 27th, that would be the 13th of April, 2022. And if it's the 26th, then one day before that. Okay, so basically, the suit was filed in Suffolk County Supreme Court. It asked that Smithtown Planning Board's preliminary subdivision approval be annulled and that the town and the former defense contractor conduct additional environmental review. Keep in mind, this borders on the town of Brookhaven. The town of Brookhaven has been given absolutely no oversight into this, even though the traffic and the environmental effects caused by development of this site would certainly have a very great impact on that town as well. This is one of the last open spaces in the area. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and we're going to continue to cover it here on WUSB. It's a fascinating story and one that affects everybody in the neighborhood. You know, you don't have to develop every single inch of land in the area, especially on an island. You know, Long Island is finite as far as the land that it encompasses. And we need to preserve this. We need to protect our drinking water. We need to protect our forests, our wildlife. You know, we live in an amazing area, and it has to stay amazing as well. And there are solutions. Just like there are solutions to our transmitter issues, there are solutions to this, where the owners of the land can be fairly compensated and the land can be preserved and everybody can benefit from it. Takes a little bit of thinking, takes a little bit of creativity, but it can be done. You just have to have the will to do it. I think that's true of just about every challenge that we face. Good words to close on.
Yeah, and don't look for easy money, you know? Do your job.
I dropped a quarter on the floor. That's all I was doing.
And do a good job, but do your job. It's not just about the next hustle.
No.
We're still watching on that last one.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Finn is coming up next. Broadcasting at 1.5%. Go Finn. And go WUSB. We're gonna solve these problems. All right? With your help and by spreading the word. Again, 631-632-6901 is our phone number. WUSB.FM is our website. OTW@2600.com is our email address.
Good night and enjoy the revolution.
Bye. Johnny Boy's got a runaway train. Travel to the east, he was then insane. Saturn won his own on the revenge game. Can't take no more. Why cut down another man's brother? Teenage fools turn on each other. Young lifeblood runs down the gutter. Every young man says, I feel no blame. I ain't gonna run no more.
that run against each other. Lawless sat his finger on the trigger. Bad knife drawn, I've had my fill. Hope is on the road.